Don't shoot the messenger. Hug the messenger. That's what the world's best groups do, from NBA champions to the Navy SEALs. Hello and welcome to the 1-3-20 podcast, the show designed to give you the most value in the least time. I'm your host, Daniel Pink. In each episode, I choose one great book, ask its author three key questions, and get you on your way with big ideas and action items in under 20 minutes. The 1-3-20 podcast. You're listening because you care about learning and developing, and also, well, because HubSpot created it. If you want more great education to grow in your career, check out HubSpot's free online courses at hubspot.com/learn. Let's dive right in. Today's book is The Culture Code, The Secrets of Highly Successful Groups. The author is Daniel Coyle. Dan Coyle is the author of several books about sports, business, and performance, including The Talent Code and one of my favorite books, The Little Book of Talent, which I've been recommending to everyone since it came out about 5 years ago. And he's also the only person I know, the only person I've ever heard of, who spends part of the year in Cleveland and part of the year in Alaska. Dan Coyle, welcome. Where are you now? Are you in Alaska or Cleveland?
I am in Cleveland, Dan, and it's so fun to be here. The sun is shining as it does every single day ever, so it's good to be with you.
All right. Well, those books I mentioned earlier were about individual performance. This one is about groups, from basketball teams to World War I soldiers to classrooms of kids. So let me begin, as we always do. What's your big idea about groups? What's the big idea in the Culture Code?
The big idea is that we've been thinking about culture in the wrong way. We think about it as a soft skill, you know, that it's complex, that it's about chemistry, that it's individual to everybody. That's wrong. Underneath that is a very clear language, not of words, but of behaviors, of signals that we send. And if you tune into those signals, you can build a better culture. Better signals give you a better culture.
Give me a sense of what you mean by culture. It's a somewhat squishy word.
Everybody's been on good teams where they add up to more than the sum of their parts. And everybody's been on really bad teams where they add up to a lot less.
Absolutely.
Culture is when a group is more than the sum of its parts. It is a set of living relationships moving toward a goal. That's the definition of culture. And when groups add up to more than the sum of their parts, we know the only study that I've really seen that does a good job of summing this up measured paired companies, and they tracked them for 10 years. And some companies had average culture and some had strong culture. And the difference in net revenue over 10 years is 756%. That's what culture is. Culture is performance. Culture is when you add up to reach your goal faster because your relationships are better, your cooperation is better, your trust is better. You're adding up to a single smart entity. And it's so important today because the problems, you know, most of the easy problems have been solved. Problems today in the business world, the sports world, the education world, they're fast moving and they're complex. And one person can't have all the answers. You need to have a smart entity. And that's why culture is so vital today.
Now you say that we often focus on what we see, which is individual skills. So on a basketball team, we look at how good a particular player is, or in an orchestra, how good a particular musician is. But what you're saying is what matters is what we often don't see, which is the interaction among all those folks.
Exactly. The interaction contains these signals. And the best example of this that I came across in my study was the spaghetti marshmallow tower test. This was built by a guy named Peter Skillman. He's an engineer, and he held a simple contest. It was who can build the tallest tower with the following materials, with 20 pieces of raw spaghetti, a yard of tape, and a single standard-sized marshmallow that goes on the top. And the teams were, teams of four, CEOs, lawyers, MBAs, and kindergartners.
These were separate teams. They weren't combined teams.
Is that the kindergartners? They're not combined. They're not combined.
The kindergartners were competing against the MBAs, who were competing against the lawyers.
Exactly right. Picture a big auditorium. Over in one corner, you've got the CEOs. You've got the lawyers over here, the MBAs, and then you've got the kindergartners. Ready, set, go. And all the adult groups, they start out by talking. And they come up with ideas, and they divide up roles, and they have plans, and they suggest innovations, and it looks beautiful. Like, it looks smooth and intelligent and cooperative. And the kindergartners, of course, just start eating marshmallows mostly and just building things crazily. It looks like chaos. And if you had to take your life savings and bet, if you had to bet which team's going to win, all of us would bet on one of the adult groups, right? We just would, because it looks like they're, we focus on what we can see. And our mental model of group cooperation focuses on what we can see. We see smart, intelligent, cooperative seeming individuals. We say, well, that's going to add up to being a smart, intelligent group. In fact, the CEOs and MBAs and lawyers lose every single time to the kindergartners, because what our model misses is safety. Our model, what's actually happening in those adult groups is status management. In the back of their head, there's a little whisper of like, where do I fit in? Like, what's this for? Are we being graded? Who's in charge? And it kills cooperation. It kills feedback. It kills creativity. And the kindergartners, they don't care who's the CEO of Spaghetti Incorporated. They just build a lot of stuff, and building it teaches you. If you build it wrong, you get great feedback, and then you can build it better next time. It's not about how smart you are. It's about how safe you are.
So this is one of your three principles of how great teams cohere, how great teams operate. Why don't you go through those principles, and then we'll talk about the one you just mentioned.
So there's three signals that are happening, and you can picture these signals happening literally in your brain, because that's where they are happening. First, at the foundation is safety, a signal of connection. We are built to crave social connection. And when we get a signal that we don't belong, that it doesn't fit, that this isn't safe, like those CEOs and lawyers and MBAs did, we shut off. We turn off. When we get a signal that we are safe, it flips, and we really pay keen attention to that group that we're in. So that is the bottom level of safety. On top of that, the next level of signal is, hey, we got to share information, right? We got to share accurate information. Mm-hmm. And the way humans do that is by vulnerability loops. We share vulnerability. We don't just keep vulnerability to one person. We share it. And there's openness. That level of openness on top of the safety forms sort of a spiral. So the safer you feel, the more vulnerable you can be. The safer you feel, the more vulnerable you can be. Vulnerability isn't really about, you know, holding hands and confessing deep secrets and kumbaya. It's actually about information.
Interesting.
You know, groups can either hide their weaknesses from themselves, or they can share them. And in today's environment, you can't afford to hide your weaknesses. If there's a problem, you have to face into it. So that's the second level. The third ingredient here is direction. It's direction. What are we doing this for? Where are we taking this? What's important? What's less important? What are we doing? And the way humans do that is through story. So we tell a story. We get a vivid story about where we want to go and where we don't want to go. Every single group, these are all functional signals for a group to cooperate. That group has to do three things. It has to connect. We do that through safety. It has to share accurate information. We do that through vulnerability. And it has to move in a direction. And we happen to do that through story. So the more you can align the signals you send as a leader, as a follower, as a team member, to those three signals, we're safe, we share vulnerability, we share weakness, and we're headed here and not there, the better you can lead and the better your team can perform.
Great teams are built on safety, vulnerability, and purpose through storytelling. Give us an example of each. Give us an example of what you mean by safety.
Yeah, the best example with safety was with the San Antonio Spurs, with Coach Greg Popovich. With, if anybody out there is a basketball fan, they know. He's like the most grouchy coach. You know, he yells the most. He gives the most intense feedback to his guys. So when I went to observe that team, I thought, I wonder how that's going to go. It doesn't seem like a very safe place, right? Well, I got to practice, and the first thing that happened was he went right over to a guy who had missed a shot the night before and starts connecting with them, sort of wrestling with him, and they're talking about the dinner reservation that Pop had made for that player the night before. He had ordered the wine. He had made the dinner. It turns out the Spurs eat together more often than most families do. Like, food is the vehicle for connection. At the end of each season, every coach gets a leather-bound album with the menus of all the places they visited and the labels of the wines they've drank together. It's meaningful time spent. So then the practice goes on, and it's time to watch film. And they had lost the night before, so I was thinking, oh, this film session is going to be intense. And the lights go dark, and the film starts to play. And what starts to play is a CNN documentary about the Civil Rights Act. And Popovich starts asking questions. Hey, what would you guys have done if you were growing up in that environment? What did your grandparents and uncles do? He was so intensely curious about them as people. He was so intensely curious to connect with them. And that, you know, a coach like that seems like magic from a distance.
Give us a quick example of vulnerability, the next level.
Yeah, the next level. This is one that I took from a visit with the Navy SEAL Team 6. I spent time with the guy who trained the troops that got bin Laden. His name was Dave Cooper. And the way he put his vulnerability was this. The most important four words a leader can say are, I screwed that up.
Mm.
Which was stunning. Coming into the Navy SEALs, I'm thinking, oh, these guys are going to be bulletproof, right? These guys are going to know the answer. They're going to be confident. The opposite is true.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely sends signals of vulnerability all the time, not just in his routine interactions with his men, where he'll say, hey, who can poke holes in this? I might be wrong. You guys take charge of this. But also in a way that's formal, actually, that can be stolen by other groups.
So is it about trust? Or maybe I should be asking, what's the difference between trust and vulnerability?
We often get trust and vulnerability backwards in our heads. And what Dave Cooper and the SEALs understand deeply is that we normally think that we have to trust to be vulnerable, that we have to sort of build up trust so that we can be vulnerable. Like, you know, it'll go that way. Well, first we'll trust and then we'll be vulnerable. In fact, we have it backwards. If you're vulnerable, that will build trust. And moments like a leader saying, I screwed that up, which gives permission for everyone else to say that too, is a beautiful way to sort of build the habit of being open together and experiencing a bit of pain that creates a lot of gain.
Go to the next level, purpose. Give us an example of that.
Yeah, Danny Meyer, some of your listeners might have eaten at some of his restaurants. He's like the Navy SEAL. Their wait staff is like the Navy SEALs of restaurant world. He was struggling. He had opened one restaurant. It was great. He opened a second one, and the service started to slip, and he got worried. When he was in the room, everyone knew what great looked like. Everyone could do exactly as they knew that culture should be. But when he wasn't in the room, stuff started to slip, and there was a sort of several crises that happened where service went way downhill. He sort of pressed pause, went away, took the whole staff on a retreat, and spent a great deal of time thinking about two things. What comes first? You know, what are we about? What's our story? And the story that he came up with was, we're about creating raves. We're about creating raves. That is above everything else. That is who we are. That is our story. And then he started almost like a composer, identifying the key moves that he needed, that his group needed to make in order to create raves. And started coming up with these kind of, I don't know, call them mantras, like athletic hospitality, loving problems. My favorite is, and they're all a little bit cheesy and kind of memorable.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite one is that mistakes are waves and servers are surfers of those waves.
Woo.
Which is exactly right. But by making that culture explicit, by giving that story, that actually a series of stories and metaphors, and putting them in the windshield of everyone, that became the basis of training. It became the basis of conversations. It became the basis of everything that they did. We sometimes think purpose is about what's in your heart, but it's really about what's in your windshield.
Let me turn the corner here and ask the next question. So this is all very interesting, Dan Coyle. We know about an elite dining room. We know about an NBA team. We know about the Navy SEALs. Most of us aren't going to be part of those kinds of groups. So why should we care about any of this?
Human groups are human groups. And what's fun about visiting those places, I think, and what's applicable about those places is that no matter what, those signals work because we evolved to care about them. Those signals, when a leader says, I screwed that up, all these things can be sort of channeled and transmitted into our normal world.
Okay, so we know the big idea is that we often overfocus on what we see, individual skills, and don't focus much on interactions. And that's really where culture comes from, and culture has a huge effect on performance. We know that in order to build these coherent, vibrant cultures, we need to have safety, belonging cues, we need to have vulnerability, sharing information, we need to establish a purpose, often through stories. We know we should care about this because the Navy SEALs and the San Antonio Spurs and elite dining rooms can teach us about all of our group interactions. So, Dan Coyle, let's go to the third question. What should we do?
We can do a lot. We can do a lot. And it starts with AARs, which stands for After Action Reviews. Very simple, short meetings after any project, after a sales meeting, after a family crisis, after anything that you've done in a group, to circle up and just ask three questions. what went well, what didn't go well, and what are we doing differently next time? Super simple and kind of hard to do. It's hard to sort of circle up and confront weakness. Incredibly powerful.
But the Navy SEALs can do it, and so can you. What else do you have in your bag of tricks, Dan Coyle?
There's something called magical feedback, which is it comes out of a Stanford study, and they looked at what kind of feedback inspires more effort. Actually, you know, it's hard to get feedback, right? But they found this one form of feedback, which they called magical feedback, because it created so much effort on behalf of the worker. And that was a really simple signal. And it said, I'm giving you this feedback because you're part of this group and we care about you and we think that you can do better. And that, when you ring the bell, when you talk about being part of a group and you talk about the standards of a group, I'm giving you this feedback because you're part of our group and we have standards here and we think you can achieve that. It's a twin expression of belonging and belief that can inspire a lot of effort.
Powerful and useful in schools, in choral groups, in youth sports teams, in coding teams. I love that one. What about from the dining room that you mentioned? What can we learn from them?
You know, every good group has got their windshield full of mantras. And when you're around them, it sort of feels cheesy, like it's summer camp. They'll be repeating these catchphrases. Those catchphrases are actually incredibly powerful. If you can define the problems you face in a series of metaphors and build them into a map and put them in the windshield of your people, it can be incredibly powerful. And the examples from the dining room that we talked about were loving problems, athletic hospitality, being an agent, not a gatekeeper, all of these things that function, that define who you are, and what you do, what true north is for your group, distilled into a catchy phrase, it can be incredibly powerful.
All right. So you have so much in your bag of tricks, Dan Coyle. What else you got?
You know, it's interesting. Getting bad news is something that happens all the time in groups, right? We get bad news. How do we respond to that? And one thing I saw in great cultures was always the same. You know, we have the saying, don't shoot the messenger. That's actually not nearly enough. Not shooting is not enough. You have to hug the messenger. If you get bad news, hug the messenger, embrace that messenger when they bring bad news. That is a moment where you can set a tone of safety to say, it is safe to talk about that stuff here. We need to share this information. It's not, ooh, thanks for bringing me that. It's thank you for bringing me that. It's incredibly powerful because it sends a signal to the whole group of what you're about. You're about telling the truth.
Okay, there's so much stuff here. We have the after action review. We have magical feedback. We have the power of catchphrases. We have hugging the messenger. We're running up against the 20 in our 1-3-20 formulation here, Dan Coyle. Give us one more to get us out.
I got one more thing, and I took it home with me. I've got four kids, and the toughest moment around the dinner table is always when you ask, how did today go? What'd you do today? And it's always a crappy conversation, right? A parent.
I've been there.
We've all been there. And so here's something that I took from these leaders that I met. Lead with your failure.
Lead with your own failure. Okay.
Do not lead with your kid. With your own failure. Something you screwed up at today. Something you goofed up. Just something funny or something real. Anything. And see what happens. Because you're sending a powerful signal that you can talk about that stuff. And it can really ignite the whole family.
The book is The Culture Code, The Secrets of Highly Successful Groups. The author is Dan Coyle. This is a rich, well-researched, highly practical book. I have more underlines in this book than probably any book I've read in the last year. Talk about it at your dinner table. Dan Coyle, thanks for being on the 1-3-20 podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dan. It was a blast.
You've been listening to the 1-3-20 podcast, created by HubSpot. If you want more great education to grow in your career, check out HubSpot's free online courses at hubspot.com/learn. And if you like this podcast, please rate it and review it wherever you rate and review your podcasts.